Good evening. It's good to see everyone. As always, I do desire y'all's prayers. It's still, for me, a great concern to take the pulpit to make sure that I'm moving in the way the Lord would want and not just moving of my own volition. I have a little challenge for us this evening. So what I wrote on the board is grace and understanding. So I'd like to start off this evening asking, what are the Ten Commandments? They're God's law, but can we name them? I know we ask our young people sometimes to do it as part of Sunday school. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. And that includes not making graven images. Thou shalt not take the Lord's name in vain. What others are out there?
Love the Lord, not God.
That's one of the great commandments. Remember the Sabbath, keep it holy. Honor thy father and thy mother. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Shall not steal, shall not bear false witness, and shall not covet. So those are things that occurred way back in the Old Testament. We count those as still true today, right? So what about Leviticus chapter 20, verse 10, and the man that committeth adultery with another man's wife, even he that committeth adultery with his neighbor's wife, the adulterer and the adulteress shall be put to death. Where do we stand on that one? Do we adhere to that one today? It's in the Bible. Well, I mean, when's the last time you've heard of a group that would take an adulterer and adulteress out and stone them, put them to death? That's why we have two words on the board: grace and understanding. People will challenge your faith sometimes and say, well, here's the whole Bible. And you say you're following the whole Bible. Well, how come you're not following this particular verse? Here's another set of verses that I want us to consider if we're following. Deuteronomy chapter 21, verses 18 through 21. If a man have a stubborn and rebellious son, which will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and that, when they have chastened him, will not hearken unto them, then shall his father and his mother lay hold on him, and bring him out unto the elders of his city, and unto the gate of his place. And they shall say unto the elders of his city, this our son is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard. And all men of his city shall stone him with stones, that he die. So shalt thou put away evil away from among you, and all Israel shall hear and fear. Do we keep that one? I'm glad we don't. Right. But I know as a young man, I can tell you from the number of times my dad worked on the backside of me that he might have felt like, if this would have still been in force, calling folks together and say, this son's being absolutely hard to deal with. We need to have a conversation here. Now, do you know there's things we do adhere to that we probably never give a second thought? Leviticus 22 and 8 says, that which dieth of itself or is torn with beast, he shall not eat to defile himself therewith. I am the Lord. When's the last time any of us walking down the road or out in the field and just found a dead animal thought, well, I'll just eat that? Generally doesn't come to mind, does it? We look at it, we think, that's probably nasty. I don't know how it died. Some things we have, and I'm going to call it an innate understanding of. Other things we need to get more understanding of. I want to turn now to Galatians 3. Galatians 3, starting in verse 23. But before faith came, we were kept under the law, shut up under the faith which should afterwards be revealed. Wherefore the law was our schoolmaster to bring us unto Christ, that we might be justified by faith. But after that faith is come, we are no longer under a schoolmaster. So now, how many of us here have been to school or are going to school? I know I went to school. What was it like in school? We got report cards. You had a set time. Usually your classes were scheduled at a certain time, and from this time to this time you worked on math. This time to this time you worked on English. If you got in trouble, and I'm speaking for myself here, you got detention, maybe even suspended. And then you graduate. And you're no longer under that schoolmaster. What is life like for us adults now? Do we have report cards? Does your boss ever tell you, you messed up, so I'm going to make you stay late in detention? Or you messed up really bad, so, you know, I'm going to suspend you for a couple of days? There are some similar things, but in reality, once we've moved out of school, things change. We've learned things in school, but when we move out into the real world, things are different. How many of us did math in school? When you did math in school, what type of math problems did you do? Did you get to just make up a math problem on your own and work it? Or was there a set of problems the instructor handed out and said, these you will work on? You have to do these. Now, I'm going to speak for myself, but I know there's others in the congregation whose jobs deal with math. When you run into math on the job, what kind of problems are you working with? I know what I run into is what we would call in school a word problem. You know, where somebody says, well, this is acting this way, and it's doing this, and we're getting this measurement over here, and you have to start figuring out, now, what formula do I need to pull out of my head to be able to figure out exactly what to do so that I can find the answer to this solution? It's not a problem defined by the teacher. The teacher doesn't have a ready answer. At this point, you're supposed to have the understanding to be able to handle these problems. And I do know there's some in the congregation that have their professional certifications, professional engineers. Those folks are actually required to continue to develop themselves. They're required to take classes, to attend activities, to continue to further their knowledge. They're not allowed to just say, well, I graduated from school, I did the prerequisite amount of work, and I went and took my test, and I've got it. Congratulations, you do. But give yourself a year or two and you're going to have to go back and extend your certification, and they're going to want to know, what have you been doing in the meantime? What are you doing to keep yourself current with the developments in your field? What are you doing to keep your understanding where it should be? Now I want to bring this back a little bit to the church. So let's go to Acts chapter 15. We're going to start in verses 5 and 6. Now, at this time, the Gentiles had started to get saved. And so there's some discussion happening in the church. Acts 15, verse 5. But there rose up certain of the sect of the Pharisees which believed, saying, that it was needful to circumcise them and to command them to keep the law of Moses. And the apostles and the elders came together for to consider this matter. So here we see there's a discussion coming up. The Jews have had for years that circumcision was a requirement. Now Gentiles are getting saved that have never been circumcised, and now comes the discussion. What do we do? The law says X. How do we handle it? So, we're not going to go through the whole thing, but let's drop on down there in the same chapter to verse 28. Because what they decided to do was to write a letter to the Gentiles. Now let's read in 28 to see what the letter said. It says, well, actually, let's start in verse 27. We have sent, therefore, Judas and Silas, who shall also tell you the same things by mouth, for it seemed good to the Holy Ghost and to us to lay upon you no greater burden than these necessary things, that ye abstain from meats offered to idols, and from blood, and from things strangled, and from fornication, from which if ye keep yourselves, ye shall do well, fare ye well. So when they were dismissed, they came to Antioch, and when they had gathered the multitude together, they delivered the epistle, which when they had read, they rejoiced for the consolation. And Judas and Silas, being prophets also themselves, exhorted the brethren with many words and confirmed them. And after they had tarried there a space, they were let go in peace from the brethren unto the apostles. So how did they resolve this problem of, dare I call it, black and white biblical doctrine? Did they come up with an education program that says, well, we need to educate them first, so we're going to give them 6 weeks of training, and we're going to work to bring their understanding about on the old law, and then after 6 weeks of training, we're going to give them another 4 weeks of giving them time to actually go ahead and get circumcised and get ready, and then after 10 weeks, if they've not lined up, well, we're going to have to push them out the door. Is that what the church did? No. They went with grace first. They looked and said, these folks are new. They're new to the whole believing in Christ. And we know the old law was a schoolmaster bringing us to Christ. So why did they go with grace when the word seems to say so clearly what should have been done? Over in Romans chapter 2, we're not going to turn to it, but it's verses 28 and 29. Paul talks about how you can be circumcised in sin. The physical circumcision didn't change your heart one bit. You could be absolutely measured up outwardly and go in sin. It didn't change you at all. And he also mentioned that if you weren't circumcised, it didn't change how your heart felt. But what I want to look at is, do you know in the Old Testament there's 8 references to being circumcised in heart? 8 references. And they were usually referring to the fact that that was preferred over just the circumcision of the flesh. And this is where understanding comes in. The reason why they gave them grace on the physical circumcision is because they understood with the proper understanding what the circumcision was really pointing to. It wasn't whether you were physically outwardly measured up. It was, where is your heart? Where is that piece of you? Did you take care of that piece in the heart? Did you trim that old hard part of your heart off? Did you let the Lord do that? So let's look at Isaiah 28 and 10. It says, for precept must be upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, line upon line, here a little and there a little. Now how does that sound like things are built? Does it sound like you get all your knowledge in one attendance of church service? You know, pick a good Sunday, find a good preacher, come in the door and give him an hour of your time and you'll know everything. You'll walk out of here measured up and ready to go. No. Sounds to me like it's going to take a while. Precept upon precept, and then that's repeated. Precept upon precept, line upon line, and that's repeated. Line upon line, here a little and there a little. Now, I did this a little bit with the Sunday school class, so you boys forgive me if you've had some of this before. But have y'all heard of the order of operations for math? Do y'all remember that? This is going to stretch some of our brains back a bit if you don't work with math. You know, that you need to do everything in parentheses first, and then you work with exponents, and then you do your multiplication and division, and last you do your addition and subtraction. So, So simple math problem. In parentheses, 2 squared plus 4 plus 3 times 2 in parentheses divided by 7. What is that equal to? Now, it may look complicated, but if you use the order of operations, we know we have to do what's inside of this first. So the 2. It is equal to 2. So first you have to get rid of your exponents. So 2 squared is 4. But then you have to do your multiplication. So this becomes 6. Then you have to finish your addition, which this is 14. 14 divided by 7 is 2. So if you know the order of operations, if you understand what's supposed to happen and how to do things, it actually goes quite easy to pull this together. So let's look at 2 Timothy. 2 Timothy verse 2. Chapter 2 verse 15. Says, study to show thyself approved unto God, a workman that needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Now, the order of math and operations is vital. I know in my work, I've done things before where I've got things out of whack and I didn't come up with the right answer. And if you deal with anything where you're dealing with engineering and things like that, coming up with the wrong answer isn't good. You're going to find that either your boards aren't long enough or things don't come together at the right angles. You can't get them to join up. And then you have to go back and try to figure out, where did I go wrong? Now, if we're not rightly dividing the word, what happens? Now I'm going to do a couple of math problems again, but this time there was a Abbott and Costello routine that they did, and as part of it, they owe back rent. They owe 7 days of rent at $13 a day. Well, they are trying to convince their landlord that it's just $28 they owe them. So first of all, they say, well, we can prove it by division. If we take 7 divided into 28, 7 won't go into 2, 7 will go into 8 once. Bring this down, that would go in 3 times, 7 divided into 28, 13 times. Is that right? But all the math works. Well, now what if I did it by multiplication? So 13 times 7, right? 7 times 13, 21. 7 times 1, 7. Add those together, we get 28. So I've done it by both addition and... by multiplication and by division. Still not convinced? How about if I put 13 up here 7 times? And just add them up. 3, 6, 9... 12, 15, 18, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28. Still comes to 28. Have you ever thought about that applied to how we look at spiritual things? Where we take things, we don't properly divide them. We find a way to make the math fit. Because I just showed you, using very wrong orders of operations in math, of how I could divide, multiply, and add, and still come up with the wrong answer, but the same wrong answer every time. It's that type of thing that we need to be careful of in life. We have to have proper understanding. 2 Timothy chapter 3. Verses 5 through 7 says, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof, from such turn away. For of this sort are they which creep into houses and lead captive silly women laden with sins, led away with diverse lust, ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. Now, we talked about grace. Some people, all they want is grace. Just I'm saved by grace. Do you know 2 Peter 3:18, where it talks about to grow in grace? There's a second part of that verse. And in knowledge. Grace saves us. Grace is what Jesus offered us that allows us to approach Him. But we will not be able to say that we've lived a proper life for Him if we try to rely on grace and never try to fix our understanding. Never try to grow, to move forward in life with that. Isn't it a shame to be called easily led astray? Just because you learn but you never understand? You take things at such a face value? In the little skit that I talked about, the person that was wanting to collect the back rent is confused in the skit and ends up not getting his money because he basically said, well, if you can prove to me that 7 goes into 28 13 times, well, then you don't have to pay any rent. And sometimes I feel like we as Christians, when we're dealing with our eternal salvation, we get into a little bit of that state where we're not being very careful with what type of math we're being shown with when people are talking real fast and the world's out there. I'm not going to do this problem because it is more complex, but I showed some of the folks in the Sunday school class, I can do math and show you that 2 is equal to 1. But to do it, if you're not paying attention to what I'm doing on the board, you will ignore the fact that I divide by 0 to get it done. Because what I can do it with is basically working with polynomial equations and things like that, where you've got a squared minus b squared is equal to ab plus b squared, things like that. And when you start dealing with more complex things, it's easy to not stop and think about the fundamentals. Because in that, part of the, it starts off saying a is equal to b. And so as part of that equation, at some point, when I write in there a squared minus b squared is equal to something on the other side. Well, if A is equal to B, that means it's the same number. The same number squared minus the same number squared is 0. At that point, the equation's over. There's no need to go further. But if you're not paying attention, I can convince you that I've done correct math until you're looking at the results and your mind is saying 2 does not equal 1. I know that. But that math sure looks good. Because of a lack of understanding, a lack of going back to the basics, of making sure we know what it is. So why is it important to know this? Let's go to 1 Corinthians chapter 3, starting in verse 11. For other foundation can no man lay than what is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Now, if any man build upon this foundation gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, stubble, every man's work shall be made manifest, for the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by fire, and the fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is. If any man's work abide which he hath built thereupon, he shall receive a reward. So we're going to be building for the Lord, every one of us. We're building a life. When we accepted Christ into our hearts, He's going to ask us to do something with our lives. And there's going to come a time where what He's asked us to do is going to be tried. In the building industry, a lot of times you'll see fire ratings on different materials. The way they determine the fire rating is they take the material and they get a flame of a certain temperature. And they put it at a certain distance from the material and they apply the heat. And then based on how long it lasts, you get your rating out of that. Do you know our works, our lives will be tried by that at the judgment? God's going to pull His consuming flame out, put it on your life. And you're going to see parts of your life potentially turn to ash and blow away. That part wasn't solid. You'll see other parts built correctly that will survive. How do you know if you're building right? If you're putting the right things on the right foundation? If you're doing things in the right order? Let's go to 2 Corinthians. Chapter 3. Looking at verses 4 through 6. And such trust we have through Christ to Godward. Not that we are sufficient of ourselves to think anything as of ourselves, but our sufficiency is of God, who also hath made us able ministers of the New Testament, not of the letter, but of the Spirit. For the letter killeth, but the Spirit giveth life. Now we've heard these verses before, and you know the word used correctly will bring life. It'll bring fulfillment. It'll bring healing. But you can turn around and take that same word and used incorrectly, it'll bring death. It won't bring the same thing because you're not using it right. You're not doing the right math. You're ignoring the order of operations. Jesus set a precedence for the order of operations for us. Remember the verse in Leviticus 20 and 10 about stoning those in adultery or killing them? How did Jesus handle that when it was brought to his attention, not just that they had found a woman in the act, but not only that, but by the way, Lord, Leviticus 10 and 20, or 20 and 10. Here's the verse. What are you going to do? She's supposed to die. The people brought Jesus, the woman, but they only brought her with understanding. They didn't bring her with grace. They went with just pure understanding. I've got the Bible figured out. Verse here, very clear. We've got you trapped. What are you going to do now? And that's where the good Lord says, okay. But now let me increase your understanding beyond just what you're reading right now. So yes, the Bible says that. It does. So now, everybody pull out your personal recollections and go to looking for sin in your life, because if you don't find any, feel free to stand up and stand on that verse and throw a rock. How'd that work out for the crowd? They step back and their understanding said, huh, you know, I'm guilty of this. What's the verdict for that? Somebody else says, well, yeah, I'm guilty of this over here. Well, what's the verdict for that? What's the verdict for sin in general? Death. Essentially, everyone recognized that at the end of the day, they deserve to die. Plain and simple. You want to obey the law that harsh? Go right ahead. But then Christ turned around and he said to the woman, what? Grace. Woman, where's your accusers? He never gave up understanding. He never condoned her activity. He never lowered the standard. What he did was he applied grace along with the understanding. He told the woman, I'm not going to condemn you. That's the grace. Not, I don't need to condemn you. How do you think that woman felt when she was grabbed by that crowd? Do you think she thought she was going to live anymore beyond that day? She was staring her last day on earth in the face. Those people were deadly serious about getting her killed. And that's where the grace comes in. Jesus looked at her and says, yes, ma'am, I could throw a rock. But that's not why I'm here. I'm here to teach this thing called grace that the old law, the letter, doesn't have in it. It doesn't understand. And because of that, I'm not going to condemn you. I am going to challenge you, though. When you leave here, apply the understanding that you now have that this is wrong. And it's a very serious matter. And oh, by the way, go and sin no more. He didn't compromise, but he brought grace into the equation. One of the things that I feel like that we need to be aware of is sometimes it's easy for us to get caught up in understanding. I've read. I've been taught. But take a look at the person that you may be judging with your understanding. Where are they at? Do they have the understanding you have? Jesus had perfect understanding. Did he use his perfect understanding to say, well, because I understand it perfectly, I get to judge you, and I get to condemn you, and I get to kill you? No. He said, I do have perfect understanding. And because of that, I'm going to show you grace. I'm going to show you how to avoid continuing down this path. I'm going to show you how to improve your life, how to save your life. Not just hear from these people, but for eternity. I've got something better for you. You know, sometimes it's easy to just read the word. Read it. Take the, I'm going to call it the literal meaning of it. Ponder it on a bit and head out into our day. And to be honest, sometimes that's a start. Some days I've been busy and I feel like that's all that I seem to be able to get done. But you know, if we're not really working to understand the order of operations, there's people in the world that will try to tell you can't live free from sin. Why? Well, because over here, the Apostle Paul said that when he wanted to do good, he couldn't do good. When his flesh just overrode him and he couldn't help it. Paul wrote a whole bunch on that. You know what they're not taking into account? Order of operations. When you're reading the Bible, if God says something, and then later on you read where some false prophet says the opposite, whose word takes precedence? And I'm not calling Paul a false prophet, but I'm just using that as an example. You know, there were times where God said, I'm doing this, and there were false prophets that said, God's not going to do that. What was the order of operation? God took precedence. What he said happened. It didn't matter what the other person said. So now, who is Jesus? Is he another man? In a way, yes. But he's the Son of God. So now, if Jesus says something, can anyone else countermand it that's not God? And we know Jesus told two people. The one man, I think, that was lame, he told him, go and sin no more, lest something worse come upon you. He told this woman we just talked about, go and sin no more. Those are two statements that if you look at the Greek words are very clear. No more, never again. There's no wiggle room for don't do it today or try better and if you do it again, it's okay. It was, no, I'm telling you, go and don't do it anymore. And so they'll take Paul's writing because it fits the way their flesh goes. And they will use it to say, but the Apostle Paul said this. And they'll put it above what Christ said. And they don't look at the follow-on of that part where the Apostle Paul gave glory to Jesus because Jesus gave power over the flesh. They stopped too early in their order of operations. They're looking for grace without understanding. I would like to challenge us. Dig into the Bible. Don't hesitate. You will find there's times the Lord will challenge you with things that you're like, Lord, I didn't understand that. And sometimes he'll challenge you with things where you're like, Lord, not only is it I didn't understand it, I still don't. Help me, Lord. Help me. But if you will work with him to gain understanding, he will use his grace to get you there. And I would challenge all of us as we go through our lives, especially as we're dealing with our fellow man in our world today, don't forget, we need understanding, but the world needs the grace that God brought until understanding comes.
Y'all pray for me.